Welcome to Locked On Heat. On today's show, I'll talk about the latest Heat-related news, some standouts from Summer League, as well as some potential big names that Miami might look to add both this summer and next. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who has covered the Heat and league at large for SB Nation and Fansided. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13. My co-host Wes Goldberg is traveling all week, so you're stuck listening to my dulcet tones. Hopefully you've heard all of Wes's great work over last week covering the Sacramento Summer League. He had some great interviews with assistant Chris Quinn, Duncan Robinson, who's been a standout there, as well as Derek Jones Jr. So if you haven't checked those out, I strongly recommend doing so. But we've got a good show for you today. Even with a relatively quiet offseason for Miami, you, our fantastic listeners, are still sending in questions for the mailbag, so we'll get to those a little bit later. But now, just some basic news. Derek Jones Jr., who I just mentioned, has had a phenomenal summer. Looks like he's put on a lot of muscle. Seems always explosive and athletic, but seems like he's really put it together. Worked a great deal on his shooting, as he mentioned to Wes in Sacramento. But unfortunately, in a game against the Charlotte Hornets on Sunday afternoon, he sprained his right ankle. He was very aggressive at first, finishing off at the rim with a number of incredible dunks. Looked very polished going to the hoop and dominant as he did in Sacramento. And then while challenging a shot on defense, he simply landed awkwardly and then was later carried off the court. So he was seen walking around after the game wearing an ankle brace, so that's somewhat positive. As far as the team is concerned, they have not made anything official, but it's a safe bet that he won't play anymore in Las Vegas. That's okay. I mean, the reality is he needed some reps, but he has some experience at the NBA level. Of course, he's started a number of games for Miami last season, so there's no reason to worry about it necessarily. Hopefully, he'll take the next few weeks to heal, get ready for training camp. Jones Jr., as you might recall, had signed a two-year deal with Miami at the start of free agency, so he's virtually assured of a roster spot, and it looked like it was well-deserved based on what we saw out of him this summer. We can only hope that we'll see more of that at the start of training camp and in the preseason. So, let's move on to some of your questions. Jonathan writes in via Twitter, should the Heat keep running dribble handoffs which favor Kelly Olynyk, or go back to pick and rolls which favor Whiteside, or a combination of both, depending on who's a floor? Well, that's a great question. We saw a lot of the changes last year in particular because of that personnel, with Hassan being less dominant and facing a number of injuries throughout the course of the year, and with Olynyk showing an incredible savviness that we just hadn't expected when he first signed with the team, it seemed like it made a lot of sense to change the offense around. It wasn't necessarily as based on driving to the hoop as it was the previous season when Miami went 41-41 and missed out on the playoffs. It was a little bit more of again, like Jonathan mentioned, triple handoffs, creating opportunities that way, especially with Wayne Ellington coming off of screens and being such a prolific and productive shooter. But I think the reality is that you want to be able to mix it up. Whiteside seems like he's going to be part of the roster, whether we like it or not. There's been rumored trade talks going on between the Heat front office and others. We've seen a number of teams move centers around in the offseason. Fortunately, Whiteside was not one of them. So the reality is, as we've explored a number of trade calls here with other Locked On hosts, Whiteside just isn't the kind of asset that you can move very easily. So he's going to be part of this roster, and you might want to incorporate him as well as you possibly can. And that is, pick and roll situations, the way that we saw over the first few years that he was here in Miami, when he ran those situations with Dwayne Wade so effectively. When Wade was added to the roster late in the season, we saw that chemistry start to kind of pick up again. And I think if Wade resigns, obviously we'd want to be able to explore that a little bit more. And I think, as Jonathan points out, depending on who's on the floor, the personnel really dictates what kind of sets you run. And I think that's part of the problem with Miami, is that you could get a little stale offensively. And I'm not sure if that's the personnel. I'm not sure if that's the coaching. Obviously, Eric Spoelstra is a very good coach, but we don't see a lot of diversity and versatility from that offense. I think the personnel can handle it. You've got playmakers like Justice Winslow, not to mention Goran Dragic. Deion Waiters was hurt, but hopefully he'll come back and he can make plays for others. So with those kind of players there, not to mention Dwayne Wade, of course, You have a number of people who can run the pick and roll pretty effectively. When Olynyk's out there, when Bam Adebayo's out there, the dribble handoff seems like it could be something that you could explore much more, and you just have to change it up depending on who's out there. We've seen a number of lineups work very effectively with Olynyk in there. When he comes out of the game, strengthen it as much as possible with Whiteside, make those lineups as effective as possible, run the pick and rolls that make him the biggest threat possible, and I think that's a way of keeping him happy, making sure that he gets his touches, and making him as productive as possible. I'm not sure exactly why they went away from it. I mean, as we talked before, you know, obviously personnel had a lot to do with it, but I'm not sure if Spoelstra made a conscious choice to kind of go away from that, or whether or not it was just something that kind of happened as a result of Whiteside's injuries and having to change on the fly. Obviously, with Waiters going down early in the season, you have to make adjustments again. When Wade comes back, you change things again. It's not the ideal situation. You want to have something that you're continuing to work on, but while showing that you can do a number of things differently and efficiently. And I think that's the biggest challenge for Spoelstra and for this Heat roster. So we'll move on and answer some other questions later on. Miami's been quiet this summer, but there's still some big free agent options available. We'll talk about one in particular after this break. Back with Locked On Heat. We'll talk about a standout player in Miami's Summer League roster, as well as the potential to add some superstars to the team. But first, Billy writes in. Okay, before I start, I get that we don't have cap space and we have a gluttony of guards. But say we lose Ellington, that's Wayne Ellington, which is still likely, and we manage to trade away a Deion or a James Johnson, hopefully with a Whiteside attached, as much as I do actually like him, but unlikely. That's according to Billy. But fit-wise, Miami needs a pure scorer who works best in their offensive system that doesn't rely heavily on isolation-type plays. Thomas has proven without a system he's just average, but I think Spo can create sets and plays similar to Brad Stevens that gets Thomas back to the 20-point-a-night form he had in Boston. Well, there's a lot to break down there, so let's kind of start off with that. As far as Ellington is concerned, a lot of moves have been made over the summer. Teams with significant salary cap space have, for the most part, used it all up, and Ellington remains unsigned. So what I've heard is that Ellington is trying to wait until Miami makes a roster move and clears up the sufficient salary cap space so that he can re-sign here. That's his first priority, is to re-sign with Miami. He had the option of assuming that other teams were interested in him, and that's what I've heard, is that Philadelphia was looking at signing Ellington. He would have been a great fit there, even after they re-signed J.J. Redick. They lost Marco Bellinelli, who went back to San Antonio, so they still needed an open shooter there. Obviously, Ellington, who played he didn't play at Temple, but he's from the Philadelphia area. He could have, you know, fit a really nice need there, but he did not, you know, get offered a contract, or he wasn't signed by Philadelphia. So from what we're seeing, it looks like the intention from both the Heat front office and Ellington are to reunite at some point this summer. So stay tuned, because it looks like a trade will take place at some point. At least that's the hope and what we're starting to see as far as certain things lining up. Secondly, as for Billy's trade suggestions, look, we've already gone through a number of trade scenarios with Whiteside. Obviously, a number of, you know, lesser centers have been moved. Dwight Howard signs with the Washington Wizards. Boogie Cousins on Golden State. The Kings added some players there. You know, I just don't see that there's a place for Whiteside anymore. The number of the teams that we thought might be good fits for Hassan, Dallas, Portland, they've already bolstered their center rotation, so I don't know that Whiteside's an option, to be honest with you. So it looks like he's part of this team, and we've already explored the possibility of that, and it's very, very difficult to move his contract and that attitude, plus the declining impact that he has in today's game. So I don't know that Whiteside's going to get moved. And then, as much as we'd love to be able to attach what you view, anyway, Billy, a bad contract, either Deion or James Johnson, I don't see that any team's going to say, sure, I'll take two of your bad contracts in exchange for a great player or, you know, salary cap space. That's not what's going to work. The most likely trade situation is one where Oklahoma City perhaps moves Carmelo Anthony for Hassan Whiteside or Tyler Johnson or somebody along those lines, maybe Deion, who the front office in Oklahoma City still really likes. Obviously, Waiters played for a season and a half in Oklahoma City. That front office, Billy Donovan, they're all big fans of what Deion can do, and he would be welcome back there. So I could see that taking place. But at the same time, you know, we're still going to get Carmelo Anthony in return, a ball dominant forward who's no longer as athletic, explosive, or accurate as he once was. So let's move on. Lastly, then, Isaiah Thomas. Well, Thomas, you know, was rumored to be linked with the Orlando Magic. That team desperately needs a point guard. They swung a trade, a really nonsensical three-team trade, where Timofey Mozgov was acquired by the Charlotte Hornets. Bismack Biyombo was sent to, I can't even remember now where it was, Jerian Grant was sent to, oh, I'm sorry, Bismack was sent to the Charlotte Hornets, where he had once played, actually the team that drafted him when they were the Bobcats many, many years ago. And then Chicago sent Jerian Grant, a kind of lackluster point guard, to Orlando. So despite that three-team trade, Orlando still needs some help at the point guard position. Obviously, they traded away Elfrid Payton last year. There's not a lot of ball handling or playmaking there. They could have used somebody like Thomas. They didn't sign him. We've heard from Josh Robbins of the Orlando Sentinel that there may not even have been any kind of negotiation taking place. There was mutual interest, perhaps, but nothing was finalized. And I, from what I've heard from teams or from reporters that are plugged in with Orlando, is that they're kind of playing the wait-and-see game, seeing if the free agent market dries up, they can offer Isaiah less than the mid-level exception, which is what they were probably going to offer in the first place. But anyway, as for Isaiah's fit in Miami, the little guy, as effective as he was in Boston a couple seasons ago, that's no longer the player that he is today. You know, he still, there are lingering injury concerns. I don't know that those have been addressed or resolved. I don't think that they have been, to be 100% honest with you. It would be great for him to be healthy again because he's just fun to watch as a scorer. But I don't know that those health issues have been negated. And if that's the case, that's probably why he hasn't been signed by any team that could use a scoring guard. But as far as Miami, you know, they're basically built on defense. And Isaiah's defense is really, really bad. You know, he is just not... He's not necessarily the most willing defender. He's much too small to actually body up on somebody. He can try his hardest, but he's going to get exploited in pick and roll situations. He just seems to lack an awareness on defense. That's not the strength of his game. And he can be exploited even in a Boston team that took pride in defense as much as Miami did. And with a number of players on their roster, you know, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, Al Horford, guys that excelled defensively, Isaiah just was not a good fit there. And so I think he was exploited quite a bit with the Celtics. We saw that continue when his you know, terrible stint in Cleveland and again with the Los Angeles Lakers. I just don't know that we'll ever see Isaiah play defense at a high level. But let's just say we're focused on the defense and maybe you can hope that guys like Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, and others will mask Isaiah's defensive inefficiencies. That doesn't seem likely either. You know, he's already played with Goran Dragic. That's not necessarily a good fit. He's a ball-dominant guard. You're going to take the ball out of Dragic's hands. You're going to take the ball out of Justice Winslow's hands. Not to mention guys like Richardson or Tyler Johnson, both of whom are playmakers. Tyler less so, but, you know, Josh has been asked to create a lot, you know, and move off ball and create opportunities for others. And so I don't know that you want to necessarily go to a 5'7", you know, ball handler and have him be the strength of your offense. That's just not going to work. You're going to piss off everybody else on that roster. And when you go out there with any kind of lineup that has Isaiah Thomas in it, you're going to get exploited defensively or you're going to have some issues defensively. For all the concerns about Goran defensively, he's been so much better since he's been in Miami. And I think a lot of that talk, from what I've heard from Eric Spoelstra himself, has been that it's overstated, you know. And I think a lot of that is based on the fact that Goran is European, that he's a little older perhaps. And so people think he's a sieve on defense. That's not the case. Isaiah Thomas, however, is. And so I don't know that you necessarily want him out there in that lineup. I think there are just too many concerns there. As much as it seems like a nice fit, I think Isaiah also has to, you know, wake up and smell the coffee and realize that he's no longer the player he was a couple seasons ago. He might still have injury concerns. He can be productive on offense. For a team that might need some scoring, like Orlando, he seems like a great fit. For maybe a team that's rebuilding, I could see that being another fit there as well. Maybe even a Chicago. You know, they're not playing for anything, but for a team that's competing for a playoff spot, you don't want to jeopardize harmony, team chemistry by going to an older, less effective, ball-dominant guard that is porous on defense. And so I don't like the fit of Isaiah Thomas in Miami's offense, to be honest with you. I think he can still be a scorer, assuming that he's healthy. But even if he's back at full strength, he's just not going to be the kind of plus member of this roster that you want out there. And with for a team like Miami that is as focused on defense, that's going to be a really big problem. I just don't see the fit there. I can't imagine with Miami's commitment to longer, you know, bodies, I can't see them going with somebody of Isaiah's small size. So it's a great question, but it's unfortunately probably not going to lead to a signing of Isaiah Thomas in Miami. However, we'll answer questions in our next segment about Rashad Vaughn and Jimmy Butler, and then we'll come back right after this break. Back with Locked On Heat, we've got a couple of questions left, starting with this one from Chris. I know the Heat are full of guards at the moment, and that's without bringing back Wayne Ellington. But depending on what happens with trades and other stuff, do you see Rashad Vaughn as an option for a two-way deal or even a roster spot? He has a good size and a decent shot. Now, Vaughn, we'll probably see more of. We're recording this on a Monday after Miami's played one game in Las Vegas. So we assume that with Derrick Jones missing most of, or if not the rest of Summer League, that Vaughn will probably get more opportunities to score. Having said that, I can't see right now whether or not whether Vaughn is going to be a good fit for Miami. Let's get into what Rashad Vaughn is a little bit more. He's 6'6", weighs about 200 pounds, played at UNLV. He's young. He's still just 21, although he's closing in on 22 pretty fast. He was a 17th pick overall from the Milwaukee Bucks in 2015, and he spent a couple seasons with Milwaukee. Spent last year between Brooklyn and Orlando. Just hasn't been able to latch on, and you know, he's a guy who probably could have used a little seasoning in college, maybe, or he might have to learn a little bit differently. The problem with Rashad is he's just never been able to put his talents together in a very complete way. You know, I spoke to Ty Windisch, who's a friend of the program, who's covered the Bucks and Milwaukee Herd, and he was a long time fan of Vaughn. Really had hopes in his ability to make something of his career there, and he's just lost hope that anything's going to be able to take place there. You know, Rashad is just, this is what Ty says anyway, he's the semblance of a guy who could be an explosive scorer, and he's right. He's tall, he's long, he's got the right body for it, he seems aggressive, he seems like he has all the tools physically and athletically, just can't seem to put them all together. And as Ty continues, maybe getting traded or cut will be a wake-up call, and he'll get a little bit more serious than he was with Milwaukee, but he never had more than a good game or two at any time, at any level. He just doesn't seem to think that, you know, the numbers, as productive as they may be, as nice as they might be in Summer League, will actually translate into the regular season. I happen to agree with Ty. I just don't see that it's going to be a reality there. So if you're looking at potential two-way candidates, I think Duncan Robinson, who Wes spoke to last week while they were in Sacramento, is probably a better fit. He's a guy who's unproven, who spent some time in college, who has a nice outside shot, certainly a much better one than Rashad Vaughn. Rashad Vaughn, a 31% shooter in his brief NBA career. Doesn't seem like that's going to go up anytime soon. He shot 29% his rookie season, 32% his second season. Shot all the way up to 37% in his third season there. So maybe there's an uptick, but at the same time, that was only on one attempt per game. I just don't see that he's going to be a consistent shooter, but Duncan Robinson seems like he has those steps, the tools to be a really good long-range shooter. And I think he's probably a much better lock. Robinson is a much better lock for one of the two-way contracts that Miami might offer next season. And as far as that other deal, if they even wind up offering it to anybody, they're going to be looking, and we've heard this from Chet Kammer, their player personnel scouting director, that they're going to be looking at everybody in Summer League, and that's the way it works. Everybody's auditioning for somebody. Just because you're on X Summer League team doesn't mean that you're naturally going to sign with that team, with the big league club, let's say. So players that are in Miami's roster might get a contract offer from somebody else. We saw that with Willie Reed a couple of years ago. You know, he was in Miami Summer League roster, and then the Brooklyn Nets offered him a deal. So just because they're part of that Summer League roster doesn't mean they're necessarily going to make that transition and sign with the big league club. They're just looking for a contract, wherever they can get it. Somebody might like enough of Robinson and snatch him away from Miami. conversely, Robinson might say, you know what, this is a team that offered me an opportunity. I tried to make the most of it. I appreciate the faith that they had in me. And I think I might want to be able to stay with that team and continue to thrive there. So we'll see what happens. I mean, there's only one way to figure out, and that's to wait and see. As far as Rashad Vaughn is concerned, don't see him being a fit in Miami. I think he's probably a guy who will wind up playing overseas, making a nice bit of money there, and maybe trying later on in his career to see if he can make it in the league, because it doesn't seem like that's very likely right now. So let's move on to our last question, which comes in from Sam. Hey guys, with the news of Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler wanting to play in the Eastern Conference together sometime soon, are the Heat the most logical answer? I believe Kyrie can opt out after the season and Butler is a free agent. Just how exactly could the Heat pull this off, and what are the chances this could happen? Okay, so we addressed the Jimmy Butler situation in a podcast last week. Sam, hopefully I'm not being, I'm not going over anything that I mentioned last week when I was recording this with Wes, but I'll try to get into it a little bit more. Both Kyrie and Butler have a player option for the 2019-20 season, so they're not necessarily going to be free agents. The thought is that they'll both opt out and then look at teams where they can sign long term. So we're not quite sure if that's going to be Miami, if that's going to be elsewhere. Let's say Miami, if all things remain as they are right now, they're not going to have the salary cap space to sign either of those guys. Let's be honest. They're going to have to move somebody around. Part of the solution to that might be moving contracts around this year for, say, Carmelo Anthony, who has an expiring contract. So that would be step one. And then perhaps you can, rather than trade away players in during the season, you can hope that Jimmy Butler will come here as a free agent in the summer and maybe potentially lure Kyrie Irving. As I mentioned in that podcast last week, Kyrie was interested in joining Miami when he was a member of the Cleveland Cavaliers. He had listed Miami as a potential option as far as the Cavaliers front office when they were exploring trades. He wanted to go to San Antonio, New York, where he's from. I think Boston was listed as a destination as well, Miami and San Antonio. So those were the four teams that Kyrie was looking to go to. He wound up, of course, being traded to the Celtics. I still think that there's a place for him there. I think that's an opportunity for him to be part of something special. I think they've embraced him a lot. So I don't see any reason why he would want to leave there. If his friendship with Jimmy is enough, then maybe they would want to form a partnership elsewhere. It's a great opportunity to do it here. For Jimmy, well, what we talked about before is there's a connection to Dwayne Wade. I think Wade could sell him on the promise of Heat culture, of being able to take his talents and become a star here. For Kyrie, well, look, he's a young man. He spends time in Miami during the offseason. I think he could come here and do a lot and maybe even potentially, erase the thought or the memories of what LeBron James did here, and I think that would probably appeal to him. That could be a challenge as well. You don't want to necessarily follow in LeBron's footsteps. From everything we've heard recently, that relationship was much more fractured than we thought. Like the relationship between Kyrie Irving and LeBron James was a disastrous one there, almost from the get-go. And although they played three seasons together and won a championship, things were pretty bad in Cleveland. So I don't know that Kyrie sees Miami as a realistic option. Who knows? We'll see what happens. As far as, as Sam writes in, just exactly how the Heat could pull off, well, one, clearing cap space, making a move there, potentially having to do the same thing again next summer, moving some other deals around. I think Goran's deal will be a player option at that point, so maybe he'll exercise that player option, become a free agent. Maybe he can re-sign with Miami, although that seems unlikely with Kyrie on the roster. So, it all depends on what Goran might want to do. He's definitely comfortable in Miami. Would he want to stay there in a lesser role where he's not getting paid as much? Who knows? I can't see that. I think, for a guy like Goran, signing the long-term deal that he did in Miami was his best opportunity of making some money. I can't see him giving up a big portion of that. So he might have to get traded if you're making that move to get Kyrie Irving. So that would be a potential thing. As far as the chances of pulling this off, not very good. At this point, I think you'd probably want to concentrate on Jimmy Butler because I think his fit is better. But at the same time, even as I'm saying it now, I kind of question that. You might want a superstar scorer like Kyrie Irving, somebody who you can build on. So he's younger, but then there's the injury concerns with Kyrie as well. I don't know. I would say right now, as far as the chances are concerned, a 10% chance at best. And I don't know whether you'd want to focus on Jimmy or on Kyrie necessarily. The hope is to get both of them, obviously, where you can lessen their respective burdens. And we'll see how it happens. I can't see it happening right now. We'll see if later on this summer other moves are made, or maybe down the line during the regular season at the trade deadline, maybe other moves will be made that could facilitate that. I'm also hearing out of Minnesota that the reports of Jimmy wanting out of the Timberwolves are kind of overstated. So as much as, you know, there is internal conflict there, I don't know that it's bad as some people are reporting. So we could see Jimmy just go ahead and take the player option next year and remain with the team. Or he could opt out and re-sign with Minnesota for a good chunk of change, and they have the money to do so. Although they'll also have concerns about trying to re-sign Karl-Anthony Towns. They've got Andrew Wiggins there on a huge deal, so we'll see what happens. But anyway, thanks to all of our listeners for writing in. You guys have been fantastic. Keep the questions coming. We definitely want to keep hearing from you. Hopefully it hasn't been too bad listening to me today. I'll be with you for the rest of the week when I record a couple more shows. That's all we have for today. Thank you so much for listening. As always, you can reach us by email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. I'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening.